PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is a man who's been sneaking into the end of our podcast lately with some great information. His name's Don Brown with True Sports. Don, great to see you.
Good to see you, Dan. I made it to the front of the pod instead of just the last minutes where everyone's mashing on the 15-second forward button.
Yeah, if you folks haven't paid attention or you get sick of me before the episodes end, there's a great component. It's called Shaft University, Shaft Education, where Don brings big questions that everyone has about shafts to light, answers the questions from a shaft manufacturer's perspective. And it's really interesting. We have a lot of threads on THP that we've created based on that. So if you want to go have a discussion, it's over there. But I felt like it was a good time to get you back on to talk a little bit more in depth about some questions I had, but also to get an idea of post PGA show, how's everything going in 2025 for you guys?
Well, now that most of our crew is recovered, because pretty much everybody to a man or woman got deathly ill coming out of the PGA show. We sent five people, and out of those five people, I think we had like probably close to 20 sick days the week following the PGA show. So outside of that, everything's going really good. So,
jeez. Yeah. James J-Man from THP came back. It was pretty beat up. I think most of our guys are in a bit of pain. I didn't go this year and I got sick, so I don't know how that worked.
Transmitted through the podcast app we're using right now. So
yeah. So what is it like for Project X, for True Temper, once you get past that PGA show? I know PGA Tour season really starts to kick up. Does it feel like the wheels on creativity slow down a little bit, and the wheels on getting that engagement, getting that understanding of product out there for people to try, or is it a 12-month cycle on all of it?
It's kind of a never ending sprint. So the very interesting thing is, you know, right now, you know, myself and our other people on our marketing staff, we're all educating the golfers right now on, hey, this is the new shafts. We just launched the PGA show. This is our new Project X Red. This is our new Nexus shaft. Hey, this is the shaft that we have. You know, we got the Denali line is out there and a bunch of drivers. We're trying to educate consumers on Denali and what that does and the particular drivers we're stocking. Literally at the same time we're doing those, I'm making PowerPoint presentations, pitching the shafts to be launched at the PGA show next year. So the overlap from I'm doing education on stuff and we're already trying to build the next thing. So it's a never ending kind of course. The actual slow time really comes in like the autumn timeframe, because OEMs have made their decisions for what they're going to use next year. We don't usually launch a lot of new product at that time of the year. The tour is slowing down. The golf season is slowing down. That ends up kind of being our slow time. But January is, okay, we got to educate people on the stuff that's out now. But at the same time, we got to go educate our OEM partners on what new products are launching 11 months from now.
It's interesting. And we have companies on talk about this all the time. We're looking at 2026, 2027.
Yeah.
But you also have to be hyped about now. And is that a hard thing to do? Because you have to look forward, but at the same time, you have to convince and encourage people to try these great new products that you've already released.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, a lot of the times what we're pitching now is very raw prototypes and very early testing results. So, you know, we're going in with, hey, here's our new technology concept for next year. Here's our new, you know, here's our new branding. Here's our new colorways, all those kinds of things. So yeah, obviously, you know, it's rough draft at this point in time, but just the product life cycle in the OEM world of, you know, designing heads, choosing shafts that fit the right swing weight. Oh, that shaft doesn't fit the right swing weight. Are we changing the head weight? Are we changing the shaft weight? Are we changing the shaft balance point? All that stuff is in place now, because the reality is manufacturing for a January launch starts in the June or July timeframe. And you're talking about, you know, on the OEM side, they're often working on heads 2 or 3 years out because they've got new technologies, and it takes a long time to refine those technologies, you know, especially if they're brand new, to figure out how to make them and how to make them efficiently.
So one of the questions I'm always curious about, and I assume it's different company to company as well as product to product, but let's say you guys land on a concept tomorrow and it is prepped and ready and fully functional within the next month. Is there ever an encouragement to just really speed up production or speed up the release, or do you sit on it to make sure everything's buttoned up?
It's more about how big our megaphone is, really. Like, we could have a new shaft buttoned up and ready to go, you know, in the next month. But, you know, from our, you know, just True Temper, we've got True Temper Steel, Project X Steel, Project X Graphite. We have steel fiber iron shafts. We now have the steel fiber Nexus wood shaft. We have the whole Acra product line, which has got more products in it than all those other brands I just mentioned, and our new True Temper Icon grip. And our marketing department is 2.5 people, because I spend half my time working on R&D stuff. So really 2.5 people. So some of it is just how much information we can get out there. And, you know, if you end up flooding the market with, you know, just from us, if we flood the market with 10 shafts in a 3-month span, you know, the consumer's not going to know what's going on. So sometimes it's just, you know, discretion is the better part of valor. Even if we've got something that is ready to go, letting, you know, getting our messaging out on the existing product and before we flood the zone with something else is sometimes the better way to do that.
So I'm sure that's happened before. You've taken a proto to tour or taken it to some of your common guys you reach out to when you need to experience something, and they just start losing their mind with excitement over what it is, how it feels, what it presents on the ball, the distance or speed gains they get. I mean, that's got to be hard to know you've got something there and to just leave it in the pocket of a little bit.
Well, sometimes it's even, you know, we'll take prototypes out to tour, and we've done, this has happened several times where we just take it out in black and the, you know, do some testing. We don't want any, you know, hey, this is the graphic, this is the branding, any preconceived notions from a player on, oh man, I've tried a hazardous before. I don't like hazardous. It didn't work for me. We don't want them thinking that, you know, or hey, I love hazardous and I'm going to hit this and I'm going to tell you I love it because I always love hazardous. And it turns out it doesn't actually work for them. So we paint them black, and then we get inevitably every time, at least one guy's like, I want to play this now. It's like, oh, well, it's just black with, you know, there's no branding on it. All the, you know, these things that a marketing guy worries about. No, I want to just play it now. And we always just say, okay, you can play it now. You know, you think this shaft is going to be the best thing for you. But then if it gets a little momentum and people start hearing about, oh, Project X has got this new prototype, it's really great, everybody loves it. Well, the thing is, we've made 10 of them. It takes a while to ramp up to make some. We might not even have graphics figured out. We don't have paint in-house. We don't have decals in-house. And if you don't capitalize on that initial buzz, you end up losing it. So like many years ago, I guess when we launched Denali Blue, we launched it at Kentucky. And we got 16 shafts in play that week. Well, we weren't anticipating that many, and the demand came rushing in. And just to be frank, we had a transport issue, and we couldn't get some of the raw materials, got held up in customs, and we couldn't make more shafts. And so we had all this built up demand for Denali Blue from PGA Tour players. Well, it took us 6 weeks to sort out this customs issue. By the time that happened, the buzz was gone. So the goal for us is, if you're going to generate buzz, you have to have the product ready to go to fill that buzz. Cause, you know, the average, you know, PGA Tour players, you know, on average, a lot of them are younger guys. So no offense to all the younger folks listening to this, the attention span's not maybe as long as it once was. And they're just getting, you know, we got what, 6 or 7 graphite shaft companies now on the PGA Tour. And so if you have the bright and shiny thing, you want to be able to put it in their hands right away, because otherwise somebody else is going to come out with another brighter, shiny thing that's going to distract them. So you got to really nowadays be fully baked and ready to go when you take something out there.
Okay. Well, give me an idea of how PX Red looks. You know, you come out with a shaft. I assume it has a particular group in mind when you're focused on designing, and the intent is to fit a certain audience.
Yep.
What's that like for you guys? How do you get there? And then once you're there, how do you focus on that type of player?
Well, PX Red, a lot of it came around from the success actually of Dynamic Gold Mid. So we had seen with a lot of players who were chasing lower spin golf ball because they're trying to get more distance with the driver, that they're now were launching and spinning their irons less, harder to hold greens. And so that's where Dynamic Gold Mid came from. We had a really good amount of success with that. We've got a bunch of wins. We've had some really big players use it. But the thing is, if you're a Dynamic Gold guy, if you're a Project X guy, Dynamic Gold Mid's not going to feel the right way for you, because Project X is a much different feel, bend profile than a Dynamic Gold. So we're like, oh, look at all these Dynamic Gold guys who needed a little more launch and spin. Project X guys don't want to go to Dynamic Gold because it's a different, you know, feel, especially in the hands. We need a Project X mid-launch, mid-spin version. So that's what PX Red is if you wanted to dumb it down to not refer to it by a color, it would be Project X Mid. So it is a little bit higher launching and spinning Project X shaft. It's not a super game improvement, super high launch, super high spin. It is just a, you know, most of our testing we've seen, you know, a few hundred RPM and a half a degree, maybe in extreme case, you get up to a degree of difference, but versus the original Project X Blue. But there's, you know, that's what those guys are looking for out there. A lot of these guys are, I want to spin it 7,000 with my 7-iron and I'm only spinning at 6,500. Those guys aren't often off by thousands of RPMs in terms of spin. So that's really where that came from. And, you know, we've only had it out on tour here for a couple of weeks, but we got actually a lot of guys have already put it into their mid irons and long irons where they're looking for more launch and spin. So we're actually seeing some guys building mixed sets, which we've seen in the past with Dynamic Gold Mid and Dynamic Gold as well, where guys will put the more mid spinning product into their 3 and 4 iron because they're looking for a little more peak height out of that, but they don't need more peak height help in the short irons.
So looking back a little bit, based on what you're saying, I assume you saw not necessarily a problem, but an opportunity to incorporate the mid profile of True Temper's concept into your PX line, which I agree is definitely a different experience going, you know, line to line. And I love that there's sort of a line drawn in the sand there. So what does it take for that next thing to come out? Are you just purely waiting for a conversation point to say, hey, we're really looking for this particular thing, and if you hear it enough times that you really start to explore it?
Yeah, it actually started, I was over at the Open Championship last year. You can play whatever humble brag sounder in the background you want on that. And was talking with a lot of the European reps and a lot of the guys over there, because, you know, they grow up playing they play a lot of golf in the wind. They play a lot of, you know, lower shots, trying to keep the ball down low. But even those guys now, as they've gone to a lower spin golf ball and we're already hitting the ball low, they're now, even those guys where they do play in windier conditions, are looking for a little bit more launch and spin. So the conversation actually started when I was over visiting with the European trucks. We had some prototypes made up, sent it over there to have them tested with our European tour rep, who tested them with the OEMs over there, got really good feedback there. And that's how it kind of launched into this global product.
One of the things I'm curious about when it comes to Project X iron shafts is I think they've had an identity based on the original rifle. Like, it's just super stout unless you have the right swing for it. And then it's just lavish is what they describe. I mean, I know a lot of guys who have attempted to play the standard Project X shaft, yeah, and they're just like, man, it's just too much for me.
Yeah.
But then you incorporate things like LZ, which is a wonderful way to really generate some of that feedback through the swing. And my personal favorite is the IO and the LS series. Is it hard to work within Project X with the idea that people will shy away based on what they've experienced previously with it? How hard is it? For example, LZ comes out and it's very, very much a feel presentable shaft, yeah, where it's quite different from original Project X. Is it hard to convince people to try? Is that one of the biggest challenges?
It is. And that's, you know, we get the feedback sometimes, you know, OEM partners, like, hey, we've got a new Project X LS or LS, LZ, IO, and the LS is supposed to be low spin, so we're not worried about intimidating people with that. When we talk about IO type product or LZ product that is a little more meat of the market, we got a lot of feedback around now. Project X is intimidating to people. Like,
yeah,
you know, because the original one was so stiff. And actually that was really the thought process with making this Project X Mid, Project X Red, is, you know, everybody knows in the graphite world now that red tends to mean a little more friendly, a little bit higher, a little bit softer. We decided to piggyback off that and use the red label because visually now so many golfers are used to red, you know, and our Denali red, and certainly some of the other very popular graphite shaft lines that are out there. Red means friendly now. I mean, that's where we've settled out. And so we're like, hey, let's take advantage of, you know, the market cap that red already has out there, that people know that it's an easier shaft to hit.
That's interesting. I've always enjoyed the process. I thought LZ was remarkable when it came out because you get accustomed to what you hit, and then suddenly, you know, same name, different label, and it's a world of difference. Yeah. We've had plenty of people talk about it, how much it's allowed them to enter the Project X storyline from an iron perspective. And then, you know, I've personally really fallen in love with LS. It's been a really fun experiment experience for me, and it's been in irons for the last couple of years for me, which is pretty cool because I of all things, I think iron shafts, I get pretty cranky when I have to change them.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, for the vast majority of people out there, you know, if you want to try a new driver shaft, you can, you know, go to a variety of different websites and order at your length with your driver tip already on it and your grip and all that, or you can go out on the bay and find somebody that's already had a failed experiment with that one and they're selling a used version for pretty cheap. But and there's no, you know, you don't need to know how to build a golf club to screw a driver into a head. With irons, you have to know what you're doing. You got to, you know, have the garage set up and the torch and the vise and the pulling tools and all that. And, you know, building, I don't even like building irons and I have all that stuff, you know, and it partly because I hate buffing ferrules. Like if you were to look at my irons, all of them, the edges of the ferrules overlap the hosels because I've tried to polish ferrules a couple of times and that's just not in my wheelhouse. And then I end up with ones that look like crap. And so I just leave them overhanging.
Well, I'll tell you what, your next beer is on me because I do the same thing. And I know Jamin's sitting there cringing right now because I don't turn ferrules either. It's a fool's errand.
Exactly.
So one of the things I'm curious about, being a worldwide brand, every market has to have a different pulse. You know, I think not just from the type of golf that's played, the climate of golf, the skill level in each market, it has to be quite a bit different. So when you're preparing to release something, is it notably different, or are you focused market to market or even country to country? Is there an understanding that there's difference, or do you try and align everything?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the biggest markets really are, you know, you have USA, North America, Japan, Korea, and then UK/EU are the, you know, the biggest markets. Australia does pretty well too. And generally, Japan product is very different from the product in the USA. They tend to go, you know, even in their steel shafts, most of their stock product over there, like if you get up into that 110, 115 range, that's like their, you know, their muscle back pro blade, you know, shaft. They don't do, there are some very good players over there who use dynamic gold, but on the whole, their market trends towards lighter and softer. Same thing with driver shafts. It's interesting, in Korea for a long time, when they were a smaller market, they just used the same products as Japan used. But Koreans, we've seen that market is generally moving towards stiffer, heavier golf shafts than we see in the Japan market. So UK, Europe, very much the same desire for shafts, but you know, the way we market over there, like in the UK, you know, there's not a lot of fitting that happens outside of the fitting cart, you know, just the way the market works over there, there's not as much, hey, I'm going to drop an extra $500 on an upcharge shaft. What shafts are, I want to be fit out of the no upcharge options. And even there, there's a lot of folks there that just go buy off the rack. If you go to Germany, I think it's like 97% of the clubs sold in Germany are custom fit. And so you know, that's just from a marketing standpoint, where we may not want to market a bunch in the UK $300 upcharge shafts because, you know, there's not as big a market for it. Go to Germany and steel fiber does tremendously for the size of that market because they're very much into the custom fitting, you know, and it's not surprising maybe coming from, you know, obviously given their automobile heritage with the really high-end automobiles that are made there, that the technology and the science there is something that is really valued.
That's crazy. I think a lot of people don't recognize that, you know, the experience is not the same. And it's not just, you made a point of saying like the speed and the lighter, the shaft. I really want to get into weight because I think it's a curious thing, because there has been a pretty significant shift in the trend over the last, let's say, 20, 25 years, maybe even 10 years if you want to go that short. But the idea that you can't just have a worldwide solution for something, is that's got to be tough to navigate, man, especially when you're focusing on new product.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like in Japan, we do really well with our Dynamic Gold 95 and 85 product line. The 85 barely exists in the U.S. The 95 we've had some pretty good placement with. You know, I would say on the steel shaft side, those markets are getting a little closer together because, you know, a lot of the U.S. OEMs are, you know, using lighter shafts these days. That's kind of the demand in the marketplace. Right, wrong, or indifferent distance, you know. A lot of club buying decisions are made in a simulator, and it's how far did I just hit my 7-iron? So lighter weight generally helps with club head speed and also helps those balls tend to launch higher, carry farther, those shafts launch a little bit higher. And we just don't get much lighter in steel, and neither are our competitors than that. So we're starting to see some kind of merging of what the stock programs look like in Japan versus what they look like in the U.S. Driver shafts, on the other hand, here, you know, 50, 60, still a lot of the market for the better players, really 60 and pretty stiff. Japan really lives in that 40, 50, even down, you know, that some of our competitors over there are making some shafts in the, you know, that where the weights start with a 2, and certainly with a lot of them with a 3. So
that's crazy. Let's go down that rabbit hole, man. I think it's worth it. I think I remember having conversations with you years ago talking about shaft breakage. You ran a risk at a certain weight where the brittleness of the shaft, the material simply couldn't hold up to the demands of the weight profile. How much has that changed in the last 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, we certainly have some better materials. You know, it's probably been at least 10 years or longer. We had a shaft here in the U.S. called the PXV39, which was truly less than 40 grams at 46 inches. There was no kind of monkeying around with, oh, well, it's less than 40 grams when you trim it for a 7-wood. It was a full-length driver shaft at 39 grams. And, you know, it held up. Most of our returns were, there was a lot of damage. That's one thing when you get those thin wall graphite structures. You know, somebody throws their bag in the trunk, or somebody throws a wedge at their bag, or any sort of side damage like that can cause the shaft to break on the next swing. And there's nothing necessarily, you wouldn't see it when you looked at the shaft. You wouldn't know that was going to happen. But with those really thin walls, any sort of impact causes delaminations. It can cause failure. Actually, our biggest retailer of that shaft was in the Villages in Florida, you know, notoriously the world's largest retirement community with, you know, dozens of golf courses. And he was the main club builder for that whole, I think the Villages is almost 100,000 people that are all retired golfers basically. And he actually started, when he would sell somebody that driver shaft, he would give them a piece of PVC pipe. So when they put the driver in the bag, it would go inside the PVC tube. So it eliminated some of that impact damage. Certainly the fibers exist now to be able to make shafts down at that 40 gram weight range that are more durable. The interesting thing, if you look at a lot of them that are out there, you know, and a lot of them are, you know, Japan domestic market product, the torque on some of those shafts is 9 or 10 degrees. And so because those are slower swingers, you know, generally you're not worried about having a torque number that high. Our 39 was just a little under 5 degrees, because we actually did have a couple tour players that used it. And that's where it starts to get hard, is making a shaft at that lightweight that can take a toe shot or a heel shot from somebody with a 100, and it was obviously not the 180 ball speed guys that were looking for that, but we'll call them the 150 to 160 ball speed guys. That's a lot harder to have a shaft hold up to than a 95, you know, ball speed person, which I think is where a lot of these, you know, 30 gram shafts are going.
What do you find over time with these shafts from a construction standpoint and durability? Is it, let's be quite honest. We have a golfer who lives in X state, who throws his clubs in his trunk, even if it's gently, and then the clubs sit in the trunk. Let's make it Midwest. So it goes all the way through the cold months, all the way through the summer months, just sitting in a trunk, baking or freezing. How much of that impacts the shaft over time?
I would say it's somewhere north of zero or south of 0.0000001% impact on the durability.
Okay.
Carbon fiber breaks down or the epoxy resin breaks down at somewhere north of 250 degrees. So even if you parked your car, you know, in the hottest place on the planet, your trunk's still not getting north of 250 degrees. So there's no impact there. And the resins are certainly designed to survive temperatures, you know, at the zero that your car might see outside. I suppose if you went somewhere really crazy, like negative 80 degrees, you might see an impact there, but otherwise you're not going to see anything.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty fun myth buster to throw in there, because people debate this all the time, where a lot of the times it's a reference to golf balls, or it's a reference to things like the connected materials between the shaft and the club head, you know, that type of thing, the epoxy.
Even those epoxies. I mean, I suppose if you're using a really cheap epoxy, maybe you have some concerns, but you know, anybody that's ever pulled an iron head off knows you can't just dip it in some boiling water and have the epoxy easy release. You're hitting it with a butane torch to get the epoxy to loosen up. So, I mean, it's not exactly the same resin, but you got to remember we're using a lot of the same materials that are being used on 787s that are flying across the ocean at 45,000 feet where the temperature is well below zero. And a lot of those resins are very similar resins to what we're using in a golf club. So,
yeah, in the Canadan custom shop, as we call it downstairs, the janky nonsense I use, I had a heat gun for the first couple years and finally switched to a blowtorch, and my life changed dramatically taking shafts off. I mean, so
the heat gun's a really good way to destroy a shaft permanently.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Back to the lightweight conversation. Is there a concentrated effort to continue that? Because it seems like the industry, at least here in the US, is really starting to adapt, especially in the game improvement segment, the players distance segment, to a lighter options that are of equal quality or result as some of those 120, 130 gram products in their same area.
Yeah. Well, on the steel side, it's very hard to make a 100 gram shaft as stiff as you make a 130 gram shaft. When we talk about, you know, whenever we talk about how stiff something is, we talk about EI, and E is the material and I is the geometry. So if your E is the same for all of these steel golf shafts, it doesn't matter if it's ours or anybody else's, E or how stiff the steel material is natively is very close to the same or exactly the same. What changes is I, which is both the outer geometry and how thick that wall is. So if we keep the exact same outer geometry and reduce our wall thickness by 25%, that shaft is going to be 25% softer. So when you think about, okay, now I take a dynamic gold that's 600 butt section and 355 taper with a 370 section above it. If I reduce that wall by 25% and I want to make it just as stiff, I have to now increase my outer geometry. So now you're talking about, okay, I'm making a shaft that's got a 625 or 630 butt geometry, and the tip end of the shaft can actually go over the hosel of the iron as opposed to into it, because that's how big it would have to be to make up for that lost weight. So generally, with steel, as you get lighter, it's going to get softer. There, within 10 grams, you can, you know, change the geometry pretty significantly. Like our DG120 actually spins just a hair less than the original Dynamic Gold, and it's 10 grams lighter. So we did some things with geometry there to keep that stiffness up. But a Dynamic Gold 95 is going to be low launch and spinning for a 95 gram shaft. If you were to, you know, put that on a robot versus a Dynamic Gold that's 132 grams, you're not going to get a lower launching, lower spinning shaft, even though they're both Dynamic Gold S300s.
Well, let's talk about graphite too, because the way I understand it, you have a couple more options there. You could build up the wall thickness, and you can also use alternative materials. And what do you call it? Modulus, is that right?
Yeah. So with graphite, you know, it's the same thing. It's EI, but now our E can change. And so I being, again, the outer geometry and how thick the walls are, now if I reduce my I by 30%, I can go increase my modulus by 30%, because our range of fiber modulus now goes from 24 ton to 90 ton. Now, as you get up into the higher tonnage, it gets very expensive, but you know, there are options in there where, okay, I reduced my wall thickness by this much, and now I'm just going to increase my modulus by the same amount, and I'll get back to a similar stiffness. So that's why, you know, you can see it's possible to build a 55 gram X, the same, you know, frequency, tip deflection, EI profile, whichever your preferred measurement method is, and torque is a shaft that weighs 85 grams, because that 85 gram is all going to be 24 ton standard modulus, and your 60 or 50 gram shafts all going to be exotic 60 ton, you know, 80 ton, 90 ton. So there's just a lot more flexibility there to get lower and maintain the weight and stiffness. Now, you do sacrifice some strength. Part of the engineering nerd strength calculation is the wall thickness. And as you go higher modulus, the materials get weaker. This is, I'm sure, Dan, you've known me a long time. This is my number one pet peeve in the golf marketing world is when somebody talks about 90-ton fiber and says it's stronger. It is not stronger. It's actually one of the most brittle fibers out there. It is just stiffer. So it can make the shaft stiffer, but it also makes it easier to break said golf shaft when you use a bunch of 90-ton.
Okay. But what about when you go from 85 to 120? There has to be a level of material used that makes things problematic, right? Because you have to add that weight. Isn't graphite particularly light overall?
Your wall thickness is going to get really thick when you get up to 125 grams. That introduces some feel issues where you start to really dampen out a lot of vibration. You know, 125 gram graphite shaft, you know, if you may hit it 10 millimeters, 20 millimeters off the center, and you might not feel that because so much of that vibration is damped and those shafts tend to get really low torque. And so you might not even really feel the head twisting as much on a 125 gram shaft. If you wanted to make an 85 gram and a 125 gram almost exactly the same properties, you probably end up doing some weird things with your fiber angles to get to 125. Because at that point in time, all you're trying to do is just use carbon fiber to add mass without adding any stiffness properties or changing torsional profiles. So there's some ways you can orient the carbon fiber in a shaft that have, in terms of just the static measurements we all know and love, like frequency and torque, doesn't have much of an effect. But it just is kind of, you're just adding dead weight.
That's really, really interesting because I feel like you talk about vibration. When I think about graphite, I don't think a lot about vibration. When I think about steel, I think a lot about vibration. Is there a balance between the two that needs to exist? And let me add to that a little bit. I've always thought that lighter, softer graphite shafts have a ton of feedback in them. They load like crazy. And then, you know, their steel counterparts might not be as robust, if you will, from a loading feel perspective. So what's the logic there that you have to dance around?
Like when you get to light steel, we talked about because the E is staying the same, you got to blow out the I to get the same profile. So that tends to end up feeling really harsh, just the way that shaft vibrates when it hits something. Like many, many years ago, we had a Dynamic Gold Superlight, which was 105-ish grams, I think, and very close to the same stiffness profile as a regular Dynamic Gold, but it was super fat. I mean, the shaft looked like a Coke bottle. And it felt so bad at impact. We had a bunch of tour players that used it. We were actually putting a vibration dampening insert into those shafts because it felt so bad otherwise. And so we had to put that in there to make the 105 gram steel shaft not, that was also super stiff, not feel bad. Generally, we'll make the really light graphite. We're not also trying to make it really stiff. We're trying to make it more compliant. So it's got a little more torque. And it just, because there's not as much material as there is in a 125 gram graphite shaft, you will get more feedback and feel a little more vibration.
For the record, I love DGSL. Feel free to bring it back.
Yeah, we get a lot of, there's a couple of tour players out there that I think are hoarding the last few sets that are in existence.
Okay. That's so funny. I think the conversation awaits a really fascinating one because there is a weird combination between lack of comprehension and like ego that goes into not wanting to drop weight. I don't know why everyone's so comfortable being in like the 60 gram weight for drivers after, you know, however many years of steel shafts and a driver head, but can't step away from these 130 gram iron shafts they've played since they were, you know, kids or whatever. Like the argument there, what is that like from your perspective? Do you feel like people aren't giving lighter shafts enough consideration, or do you think that this is a bit too much conversation going into go lighter?
I think, you know, with driver shafts, it's kind of easy to understand. Ball go far. That's all you really care. Ball go far and I can find it. So, you know, even back to our Graphaloid days, our fitting mantra was kind of play the lightest, softest shaft you can control. So if that means going down to a 40 gram R-flex and you can still find it, awesome. There you go. That's, you know, that's great. With your iron shafts, you know, if I gave you the option, Dan, of you can hit your 7-iron 155 and into a Home Depot bucket every time, or you can hit a 165 into a kiddie pool, probably gonna take the shorter shot with the Home Depot bucket, because that's really at the end of the day what we're usually trying to do with our irons is hit them to a tight grouping. You want to know where that ball is going to land front to back, left to right, every time.
And well, so hold on. How big is this kiddie pool? That sounds pretty good.
But, you know, if you think about it, if you start having, we got 10 yards of variation with your 7-iron, that causes you a lot of problems when you're, you know, if you're hitting to a middle pin, it's fine because your green's going to have give or take. But you got a pin on the left, right, front, or back, and you got 10 yards of variation with your 7-iron, you're going to end up missing a lot of greens. And some of that is just course management, donated the flag, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, from an iron fitting standpoint, I generally, you know, go with an iron shaft weight that is going to give you acceptable distance, but that's going to allow you to maintain the tempo that you're looking for. So Lord knows, I don't hit the ball a long way. I could probably squeeze some yardage out of a lighter iron shaft, but I also have a super aggressive tempo at the top. And if I get anything too light, I really start to lose, you know, sense of where the golf club is, and I get wild with it. So, I'm down actually now in steel. I'm the current gamer set. I got a set probably just because I want to play Japan only, not available in the U.S. stuff of Dynamic Gold mid 95 tour issue and a black finish. But before that, I was playing PXIOs, which are 110 grams. And again, for my club head speed, a lot of traditional people might say, oh, you know, you need to be down in a 75 gram graphite iron shaft. But I just don't have any idea where that club is going. So for me, I tend to focus on control and distance dispersion, both left, right, and front, back first with an iron shaft, and then worry about the distance.
So what you're saying is you were the original test subject for hazardous black.
Yeah. And like, and again, I don't have the swing speed for hazardous black either, but it is so, that's another one where my tempo is so, you can call it aggressive or you can call it bad. It's probably just bad tempo. I don't like to feel the shaft move. Like, there's a ton of success out there with our Denali line. A ton of people love that golf shaft. I still play hazardous stuff because I need something that is very rigid through the handle in the middle, because I don't want to feel the golf shaft move, because it just, then I'm trying to, you know, I feel like if the shaft's moving in the wrong way, I'm trying to correct a bunch of things at the bottom of the swing with my hands. And that inevitably leads to overcorrecting or undercorrecting in the wrong direction. So
tell me a little bit, because I definitely understand what you're saying with this sort of precision and flow, I guess you could say, conversation when it comes to scoring irons.
Yeah.
There's been a bit of a shift on wedges, and specifically wedge shafts have gotten lighter over the last probably 5 years or so. You guys at True Temper specifically sell a lot of wedge shafts and are very recognizable in that space. Is there concern that you're seeing these companies shift to a lighter weight, or do you think they're doing it in a way that makes sense?
I think some of it is just you want some progression. I think it's about not having a huge gap between your iron shafts and your wedge shafts. So if you're playing Dynamic Gold 95 in your, you know, four through pitching wedge, and then you're whatever, you have a gap wedge or sand wedge next, and you got 132 gram Dynamic Gold in there, that's a pretty big jump in the static weight of the golf club. So, you know, we have, you know, our Dynamic Gold wedge shaft, Dynamic Gold 115 wedge shaft, which was specifically designed as like, okay, if you're playing a shaft that weighs less than 110 grams, play the DG 115 wedge shaft, because you still get a Dynamic Gold performance, but it's at a, you're reducing that weight jump. But if you're playing something that's, you know, in that 115, 120 range, stick with the 132. You know, I play for my personal game. I don't hit a lot of like pitches and stuff with my gap wedge. That's always a full swing club for me. So I play that same Dynamic Gold mid 95 in my gap wedge. And then in my sand wedge, I'm at 115, and my lob wedge, I'm at 130, because, you know, those shots, sand wedge is kind of a mix of either full shots or delicate chip shots, but the lob wedge is always just, you know, delicate little chips where I want as much mass in my hands as I can get, so it's more under control.
Hmm. One of the things I've been curious about, and probably last question on the show, although I do want to hear about steel fiber really quick once we get done with this, but wedge shafts, I feel like there have been some solutions over the years. Love spinner. I thought it was a really interesting concept, and wedge shaft obviously exists for very good reason, but how much attention gets put into the wedge shaft realm of the conversation? Is there an intent to continuously pursue better there? And if so, what are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, we're always trying to come up with better. You know, the spinner is a good example. The original DG spinner, if you remember, it actually had like a little recessed section in the middle of it. And then we were able to achieve a similar thing without having to do the recessed section. But the original was an answer to a USGA rule that changed what was a conforming groove and reduced the amount of spin coming from a wedge head. So it's like, okay, how can we go get spin back into that wedge head? You know, and now we are always striving to improve. But if you talk about how much difference can a shaft make in spin, if that it's not a percentage of, okay, you can increase the spin by this much. It's kind of a set. You can change the spin by this many RPM. So if I'm giving you 300 RPM on 3000 with your three iron, I'm giving you 10%. If I'm giving you 300 RPM on your gap wedge that you spin 10,000, I'm giving you like 0.3%. And so the amount that we can affect those changes is not nearly as drastic. And again, I think that's one even more when you get into your wedges. It's about tempo and comfort. I don't think anybody wants to look down. You know, you got to flip a little 5 yard shot over a bunker to a tuck pin. The last thing you want to be thinking about is like, man, is this the right wedge shaft or should I be playing? No, you just want something that is going to help you control tempo, give you the performance benefit you need. But more than anything else, it's just confidence over it. I think that's why, you know, Dynamic Gold S400, you know, you say we sell a lot. We sell Dynamic Gold S400 or S200s, those two wedge shaft models. That probably makes up almost 50% of our business. And I mean, it is the most dominant wedge, not only at the tour level, but, you know, most of the big players that are, you know, the high market share guys are using those shafts in some, if not all, of their wedges.
It's always an interesting debate with people, just regular golfers, because they're even the ones who get super focused on getting iron shafts that suit their game. They get the wedges that they just buy over the rack. They don't put any thought into it because the wedge is a wedge. And it's been a pretty funny conversation. And maybe we hang on to this discussion until the next show, next time we have you on. But the fact that people don't consider their wedge shafts until they're asked to change them has always been really fascinating to me. It's just like a willingness, like just leave it alone. That's my wedge shaft.
And again, it probably a lot of it comes down to how you're swinging said wedge. If it's a full swing wedge versus it's a, you know, I'm just bumping, running this up onto the green, that probably plays some role into people's mindset about how important the shaft is. If it's a, you know, if it's a shot you're hitting 5 miles an hour, you know, just a little bump and run. There's a lot of people, you know, if I'm more than 10 yards from the green, you're not seeing my 60 degree wedge come out. I mean, it's coming out three times around maybe. So I'm more focused again there on something I control and not bladed over the green. Whereas if you move to the more loft and I'm playing it from further away, then I start to worry about more, okay, is there enough spin here? I need to generate more club head speed so I can generate more spin. I do want to go a little bit lighter. So,
Yeah, I'm not as deathly opposed to the 60 degree as I am to aim point, but it still terrifies me.
At my level, I probably shouldn't have one in the bag. It's, I got to put 14 clubs in there and, you know, sure. I have a super game, my sand game so bad. I have a super game improvement 58 degree sand wedge in my bag that only comes out for the bunker, never comes out anywhere else. And it's like, how often do I really hit my three wood well? I probably save more shots with this super game improvement wide sole, a lot of bounce sand wedge than I would ever gain with trying to hit a three wood home on a par five. So the three wood went to the garage and I now have five wedges in my bag.
I love it. I think a chaotic golf bag is what everyone should have. It doesn't need to make sense to anyone but you. I believe that completely. Before we wrap up, Don, tell me about Steel Fiber Nexus. And by tell me, I mean tell everyone about it. What's going on there and why should people look out for it?
So, yeah, I mean, that's a product I'm super excited about for this year. I've actually been playing it since last June. We've been prototyping this one for a long time. Basically what it is most of you folks are probably familiar with steel fiber iron shafts. It's been, you know, the most dominant premium graphite iron shaft on tour and in the market for going on 20 years. And it's a graphite core with steel wrapped around the outside of it. That steel gives you some of the consistency and the hoop stiffness that you get out of a steel golf shaft. There have been wood shafts before that were made with a similar process, but because the steel fiber took up so much mass, and it left the flexibility to the design weakened because you only had so much carbon you could go tweak with, and it didn't feel all that great. So what we've done with the Nexus is we've done a steel fiber wrapped portion at the top, but the bottom half of the shaft is 100% graphite. So that gives us the design flexibility to go do more tweaks to things like torque and launch conditions and spin and all those kind of things. So But because it was so unusual, like for the black line in 60 grams, we have three flexes. We started with 9 different shafts just for the 60 gram to get down to 3 flexes and went out and tested all of those to determine like, okay, this is where the R is. This is the S, this is the X, because that steel fiber does give you so much more stability at the top half of the shaft. We didn't want to just go be like, okay, our S flex is always 255 and we're going to make it that. We're like, no, the steel fiber may change the way that feels regardless of what the frequency number is. So we're going to bring in 245, 250, 255, 260, 265, and go do a bunch of player testing. And that's how we're going to determine which shaft fits into which flex slot. So like I said, I've been playing the blue version, which is a 50 gram part, a little more launch and spin, most by the back half of all last year, just unpainted raw shaft. And then at the show, we launched the blue, which is in 50 grams mid spin, and then a black in 60 and 70 grams, which is a lower spin part. For people that really like to feel a lot of stability at the top, but want some kick at the bottom, it's a really, really good option.
Nice. Awesome. Sounds cool. I hope everyone takes a chance to go check that out for themselves. And obviously PX Red's a storyline as well. Worth having a conversation for those who are looking for PX in a mid sort of style. I think that sounds pretty interesting. I love when
a little bit lighter weight. So like the 6.5s are 120 grams, the 6.0s is 110. So backing off the weights a little bit from the traditional Project X and the Project XLZ.
Yeah, I love seeing Project X lines expand. I think when IO came out, I was super thrilled about it. And I was actually, true story, I was actually kind of terrified of using LS. So I was like hanging out in IO for a while and I really liked it. And then I tried LS. I'm like, you know, this isn't that scary. And I ended up, you know, completely falling in love with
it. So we thought we would have a bigger uptick with LS just because these young guys that are coming up that are the 185, 190 ball speed swings with the driver. We're like, oh, we're going to need something stiffer than Project X7.0 or Dynamic Gold X7. So we made these products. What we found is those guys are swinging out of their shoes when they're hitting that 185, 190 ball speed with the driver, and they're trying to maximize distance. But just like what I talked about when you're fitting for your iron shafts are not swinging as hard as they can because they can hit a pitching wedge 160 at 75% of their effort. And so they're, again, just looking for control. So they don't necessarily need that super stiff shaft because even though they're the highest swing speed drivers of the golf ball, their iron shaft or their iron shot swing speeds tend to kind of trend more back towards middle of the pack. They can just do it with less effort than some of the guys that were previously out there.
Yeah, I love it. Any final bits of feedback or questions for me today, Don, before we wrap up?
No, I'm just was very excited to do the long format version of this. Hopefully, you know, we'll continue to do the little short format versions at the end. So guys out there, if you have questions you want Dan to ask me, fire them away and we can answer those. And then I think we're scheduled to do a couple more of these long ones a little bit later in the year.
Sounds good. Hey, everyone, I hope you enjoyed the show today. We'll have a conversation on the THP forum about this podcast when it drops. So come and talk to us about your favorite Project X, True Temper, the whole gamut of lineup.
Acra, Aerotech.
just lead into all of it.
Yeah, any of the 5 different product lines that we that
yeah.
we
manage. Yeah, and if you are playing golf this weekend, have fun. There's snow on the ground here, so I'm a bit bitter, but I'm not playing. But, you know, play well. Have fun. Make sure you tell someone they're good at golf. They probably need to hear it. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.